Hi there, my name is Hudson Phillips, and you are listening to the Script Blast Screenwriting Podcast. My goal is to help you write better screenplays and write a better life. The theme for season one is productivity, clarifying what you want, how you're going to get it, and how to keep it going. Today, we're going to be discussing life-work balance, the greatest, most elusive MacGuffin of all creatives, right? As writers and filmmakers, we're often working two full-time jobs while also finding time for family or dating or friendships. And many times we feel like we have to choose between our dreams and a healthy lifestyle. So today, I talked to a good friend of mine who will help us navigate that balance. My guest today is Van Jensen. Van is a screenwriter, novelist, comic book writer, journalist, and filmmaker. He's the co-creator of the Pinocchio Vampire Slayer series and has written both The Flash and Green Lantern Corps at DC Comics, as well as adapting James Bond into comic form. He also just finalized the sale of his original TV show to a major studio, and if that wasn't enough, Van is also the publisher of Arts ATL, an independent newspaper covering the arts in Atlanta. So with all of those plates spinning, you can see why I wanted to speak with Van about finding balance. Let's jump into it with Van Jensen. All right, Van, thank you for hanging out with us today.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
Absolutely. So you have a bit of a kind of long and twisting writing journey with a lot of stop-offs at different careers and things, starting off as a crime journalist. And I feel like maybe that early experience established a certain work ethic in you that maybe influenced the rest of your career. Can you talk a little bit about that and how it brought you from there to what you're doing today?
Yeah. So out of and in college, I studied journalism, and then out of college, I worked as a crime reporter in Little Rock, Arkansas, at the main newspaper there. And the thing that I always tell people is, you know, there's this question that I get a lot from writers about, like, what do you do about writer's block? And I always think back to working at the newspaper, where, you know, it's like I've got the police scanner, you know, listening to the radio calls and then like driving around the city to crime scenes and reporting on stuff. And every night it's, you know, there's a certain point where the newspaper goes to the printing press and you have to get the stories done before then. And so I would be literally racing the clock to write this stuff and, you know, report on these crimes and to put together articles. And if I ever made the, you know, the excuse of like, oh, I've got writer's block, I would not have a job the next day. You know, it's very simple. It's like you either do the work or you get fired.
Yeah. So a more likely excuse was I am extremely traumatized by what I just witnessed.
Right. Which, you know, absolutely. It was pretty horrific at times. I grew up on a farm. So, you know, I kind of have always had, I think, a solid work ethic, but it like deromanticizes writing to where, you know, when you're a journalist and when you're on that daily deadline, you don't wait for the muse of inspiration. It's just like, okay, go to work, crank on it, make it as good as I can make it, you know, clock out, do it again the next day.
Yeah. So tell us a little bit about your journey since then, and your kind of stopovers in different mediums, different genres, and maybe how those original experiences for yourself influenced those new areas that you explored.
Yeah. So at the newspaper, I worked with Dusty Higgins, who's an artist, and my wife and I moved to Atlanta for her to go to law school. And it was after we moved here, I had started working in magazines rather than newspapers. And Dusty called me up and asked me if I wanted to do a graphic novel together. And he had this concept of kind of a, you know, a like tough Pinocchio character fighting vampires. So, I mean, we really, like, neither of us had ever made a comic book, but we both loved comics. We both loved storytelling. So we just, you know, we just figured it out. So that became Pinocchio Vampire Slayer. And, you know, my advance on the first one of those was like $300. So, yeah, you know.
So you quit your day job.
Right. Quit my day job, bought a yacht, all that good stuff. Yeah. So yeah, no, I mean, I was just like for probably like 8 years, 7 or 8 years, just working, you know, working full time and then writing whenever I could. And then I started to work Top Shelf Productions, a graphic novel indie publisher, used to be in Atlanta. And I would work with them and just learn about the industry. And then I kept, like, I would freelance for a lot of different places on the nonfiction side. And then, yeah, just kept doing the Pinocchio books and a few other things here and there and learning about the business and starting to go to conventions more. And then, you know, kind of through networking, got connected at DC Comics. And it, you know, it was truly just one day they gave me a call and was like, hey, you want to write Green Lantern Corps? So, you know.
Yeah, that's insane.
Yeah. I mean,
and I'm assuming the paychecks got a little better.
Yeah, yeah. The pay for superhero comics, it's, you know, it's not bad at all. So yeah, like actually started, like got to the point where I was making a living and wrote The Flash and, you know, wrote for DC for like 4 or 5 years, I guess. I think four years. And then, you know, worked on a bunch of other stuff, did some James Bond and, yeah, and then, you know, for a stretch is writing full time, and then now I run Arts ATL, which is at artsatl.org, which is a nonprofit that journalistically covers the arts in Atlanta. So I do that plus writing.
Yeah, that's awesome. And so you kind of made the decision somewhere along the road that comic books weren't quite enough for you. So you've been dabbling in filmmaking and directing and screenwriting and creating a TV show. So tell us how all that came about and kind of what the motivation was behind moving into these new mediums for you.
Yeah, it was a combination of things that kind of all hit at the same time. And, you know, on like one big part of it, which I'm sure is going to make me sound like a crazy person, but, you know, I was running a magazine and then stepped away from that because I was writing 2 monthly books for DC and, you know, had some new projects coming up and I was just busy and, you know, kind of couldn't do it all. And so shifted to writing full time. And I did like 2 years of just writing and, you know, which is great. And that's like the dream. But as I was doing that, I had this realization that I really missed project management.
Huh.
And, you know, I don't know how to say it other than that, but I missed that like active collaboration that comes from having a creative vision and then working, you know, leading a team to execute a vision.
Right, right, right.
And so I had gotten to know, you know, a ton of different creative people in Atlanta, and especially because film is so big here, just a ton of people working in film. And so I was meeting with some of those people and I was really having this deliberation of like, I want to do this. Like, I know I can describe the kind of work that I want to do. I just don't know what that job is.
Right.
And so I was having a conversation with people and everyone was just like, dude, you're talking about being a director. It's like, this is a very, there's a very obvious answer to this question.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
And so, yeah, so I just had these great, you know, great connections that really guided me into film. And I mean, I'd never been on a film set, but I had written a couple or maybe a screenplay or two just for kicks at that point. But yeah, that was so
just write screenplays to relax in the evening.
Right. Right. Cause I don't know. I mean, it's like, I don't know what to do aside from sit down and, you know, keep churning on stuff. But yeah, so I directed a short and then I've directed a couple of other shorts and directed some music videos. And through that, I think, you know, it was mainly more people in film started to hear about me. And it was like, wait, the dude that wrote The Flash is like making short films. And like, how did that happen? So I think I was like this novelty to people.
Yeah.
who is this dude? So then I just got to meet more and more people and got connected with Picture It Productions, which is a production company here in Atlanta. And they approached me about, developing some TV stuff. And I mean, it's not like I was sitting around like, let me tell you about all my genius TV show ideas. But my general attitude about things is like, if anyone opens a door for me, it's like, I'll stick my head through, just check it out.
Oh, absolutely. And I think it's such an important lesson for writers and creatives in general of following the momentum of kind of putting a lot out there and the thing that is gaining traction, that's gaining speed. That's the thing you want to latch onto, which I'm kind of curious. So a lot of advice you hear is, oh, just focus on one thing and become great at that one thing. But you kind of threw that advice out the window and you're doing a million things and it seems to really pay off for you. So what is it about that? Is it just the plant a bunch of seeds and see what sprouts, or is it that you get bored, or what is it that really drives the multiple mediums that you explore with your writing?
You are very nice in the things you said about me, and I don't know that I've I don't know that I deserve it. But I do think I get kind of intellectually bored with things.
Right.
Even with a story, it's like once I unlock a story, then it's just work. And I always, with comic books, even I think I've always looked at like how can I challenge myself? Like how can I create something that's, different than what has come before, or play with the medium in innovative ways? I mean, there was like the $6 Million Man issue that was all, 124 page long single panel that it was,
it was awesome.
It was just like the artist and I being like, hey, what if we did something that no one has done before?
Right. So when you have an idea, you're like, oh, this is a comic book, or this is a movie, or this is a novel. Like, you work towards the medium. You don't try to shoehorn something in, right?
Yeah. So my process, story refinement is all pretty much the same, like medium to medium. Like I don't typically, yeah. I mean, every once in a while something appears and it's just like, this is obviously this, but generally right. I have a story idea and I kick it around for a while and I try to get to where I can write basically like a one page synopsis of what this thing is.
Yeah.
And even truly just to have like one sentence that summarizes the project really well. And from there, I decide like, okay, like in terms of, business sense, in terms of, there are just some things like interiority does really well in novels, but, and you can kind of do it in film, but you can't really do it in comics at all, or at least it's very hard to do it in comics. And some like comics are a very tight medium. They're very constrained in terms of space.
Only so many words you can fit on a page, that kind of stuff.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, if you put any more than like 300 words of dialogue on a page, it gets super crowded.
Right. Yeah.
And then
limited to, I guess, 22 pages is the kind of standard for a comic book issue, at least.
Yeah. 20 to 22 pages. And that, that space goes by super, super fast. So it really, I just finished a novel, which I, is something that's new to me. I've written a couple of terrible novels in the past that are, buried.
The first one you're proud of.
Yeah. The first one that I looked at, I was like, all right, this doesn't suck.
I'll show this to someone besides my wife.
Right. Yeah. So that novel, the original core idea of it, I had the idea, and initially I was like, this is a comic book. Talked to some people about it and, got some traction with it. But then when I was starting to work on it, just like it never clicked. And so, I wrote, you know, a bunch of it, but it just didn't quite work. And I realized it was like, it was just too expansive. Mm. And then I wrote it as a pilot script just to like, you know, help me unlock it.
Yeah.
And wrote that. And I was like, yeah, this, you know, this didn't quite click either. And I had really not even had it in my head to write it as prose, because I don't think that's a strong suit of mine, or at least I'm not as experienced there. But then, you know, when it didn't work as a TV script, I was like, well, you know, all right. Like it, because of a few different factors, it seems like it really makes sense as a novel. So, all right, I'll just sit down and figure that out.
Which is fascinating, because you're choosing what's best for the story, not necessarily what's best for Van at that time, right? You're trying to serve the story.
Yeah, I mean, it's always, it's like, how can I create the best actualization of this kernel of an idea that's in my head?
Yeah,
and
which I think is so important and something not many people probably think about, that they kind of feel like they're in one lane. And so any idea they have, they try to shove into that lane.
Well, and I mean, I can't say that like, that my path is right. I definitely can't say that my path is right for anyone else. But I also don't even know that my path is the best thing for me.
If that makes sense. Right.
Like, if I, you know, if after Pinocchio Vampire Slayer, like, if I had spent my entire time doing, like, you know, kind of clever, you know, jokey pseudo adaptations in the, like, horror comedy vein, like, I might be a lot more known today than I am.
Yeah, you'd have your thing.
Right. But for me as a creator, I mean, number one, I'm always, I follow the story idea. So, and I never worry about ideas. Like ideas just appear and they're kind of a dime a dozen. And so I wait until something really hooks me and I feel like it has something to say about the world. And then, you know, I take that and just kind of iterate on the idea and play around with it. And just try to figure out like, what is this thing want to be? But I mean, I do think about, you know, there's a degree of thinking about like, okay, you know, I write because I want to create stuff that goes out in the world and impacts people and that people actually, you know, read and consume or watch or whatever it is.
Sure.
So there is a degree of like, you know, if I have a project that's like, this really needs to be a novel, but like no one in a million years would ever read that novel, well, I'm probably not going to write it.
Right. Yeah. None of your ideas are like, oh, this would be perfect for fan fiction.
Right. Yeah. And
not that there's anything wrong with that, but
yeah. I mean, I'm trying, the whole point of this is, you know, for me to make a living. So it's there's got to be a commercial aspect to it. So I don't want to act as if I'm like some monk who is absolutely, you know, unconcerned about commerce.
Right. Yeah. You're still seeing what connects with people. So let's jump into some kind of nitty gritty, like productivity stuff I'd love to talk about and kind of life work balance stuff. So because you're such a diverse creator and you have your hand in so many jars, so you're a writer, a director, novelist, screenwriter, journalist, editor, launching a TV show. How do you prioritize all that and how do you balance it all? How do you know what to focus on when and what gets your attention at any given moment in the day?
Yeah, I mean, the kind of the analogy that I always describe with creative careers is it's like you're a chef and you've got a stovetop and the stovetop has like 25 burners. And you know, and each burner has a pot on it, and each pot is made of a different material and contains a different, you know, food substance, and the burners are all at different temperatures, and you're just waiting and watching for like, you know, which of these is going to come to a boil. And the hard thing is some things never come to a boil. Some things come to a boil faster than you ever thought that they would. Like some things boil over and are ruined. And it's really a challenge. the main thing, I mean, I kind of try to focus on thinking of in terms of like seasons of life, so that it's like there are certain points where I just go into, it's like, this is my 1A. And then if I have extra time, I have my like secondary things that I'm going to work on. I always try generally to be like actively writing one thing, doing sort of post-production, which can be editing, you know, rewriting. Like if it's a comic, that means that art is coming in and I'm doing art notes and lettering notes. And then, and then to be doing kind of pre-production on something. So that could be research for a book or a story. That could be, I mean, sometimes I do a lot of like conceptual sketching. So that can be something, or like if it's a film project, like if I'm directing something, like directing a music video where I don't have to write it as much, I'll spend that time like drawing storyboards. And I try to divide my day to where I have two main periods of writing. So like first thing in the morning until almost noon, and then an afternoon period of writing, and then a chunk of the day that's, you know, that kind of like pre-production time, and then a chunk of the day that goes to the post-production stuff.
Yeah, no, that's awesome. So yeah, one thing I actually wanted to talk about was kind of energy levels. So like throughout a typical day, like I might notice there are times where I'm very energized and times when I'm not at all. So like during the energized times, that's when I'll write. So first thing in the morning, maybe after, you know, early or late afternoon, I might have a second kind of energy time. So I'll write during those times or do the ultra productive things during those times. And then during the low times, I might return emails or take a nap or whatever. So like, do you find that you kind of have that ebb and flow of energy times and then divide it up accordingly?
Yeah, absolutely. So yeah, for me, it's the same. And I mean, I try, it's a challenge just in like, I mean, mainly having young kids.
Right. Yeah, just, yeah, yeah.
It's something to navigate with all of this. But yeah, so I try to get up early, and it's, people don't really think of it, but your mental energy is just the same as your physical energy. Like it's literally the same thing. So like when you're thinking and when you're working on something creative, you are burning calories, you know, your brain is burning energy, and you only have so much of that. So it's great to get going early in the day and yeah, to give yourself, you know, these breaks and these pauses. And I mean, I'm a pretty fast writer. So, you know, for like a comic book script, you know, a typical 20, 22 page comic book script, like I pretty much knock one of those out in 2 days.
Yeah.
Where a lot of people do, you know, one a week maybe, or one every couple of weeks.
And is that 2 days of actual writing, or is that including the kind of breaking it out and brainstorming and all that too?
It depends. I mean, I would say typically including the brainstorming is like 2.5 days or 2.25 days. I can write faster than that. I don't prefer to.
Yeah.
But then the other thing that I would say is the biggest thing is making sure that you write in a place free of mental clutter.
Mm.
And the biggest thing is to get away from the internet.
So you have a writer's, what do you call it? Shed, right?
Yeah.
That you built in your backyard. Yeah. And from my understanding, it does not have internet. You can't access internet.
There's no internet.
So wait, how do you keep it from having internet if your house has Wi-Fi?
The Wi-Fi just isn't strong enough to get back there.
Oh, gotcha. Yeah. That's awesome.
Yeah, it's at like the very far back of the yard. It's just this little shed, and my writer's room is on the back end of the shed. I can stare at the fence and watch the squirrels run around, or I can work.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. So what advice would you give for a writer trying to find their place to write? What kind of things should they look for? Or like, is it really true that different writers, you know, work well in different environments?
Yeah, well, and I mean, I think that you can kind of adjust to any circumstance. Like I went through a period when I was really getting busy at DC where I was traveling a ton, and I was always like, I have to have absolute silence to write. And I just got to a point where it was like, well, I can't make excuses. So I would, you know, I would write on the airplane. I would write everywhere. But you are your most productive when you are not being distracted. Like that's just true. So just find like, what's the place where you don't have distraction? Like maybe that's going to a library. Maybe it's, you know, holing up in a park somewhere. Like maybe it's a, you know, I mean, there've been writers like Stephen King wrote a bunch of stuff essentially in a closet in his house. I'm sure that he does not now write in a closet.
Right. He can afford a much bigger closet.
Right. Exactly. But yeah, that like the principle is just get away from distractions. But I mean, I just keep, as much as I can, I try to keep distractions out of my life, period. Because, I mean, just simple things like I don't own any video game system and I haven't for almost 20 years.
Wow. Yeah.
And there's no judgment against video games. Like, I think video games are great. I think that they're a ton of fun. I also have 20 years of my life where I have not spent any time playing video games. Right. So, right.
Yeah.
You know, if you think about 20 years, like how, even if I didn't play very often, like that's a ton of time.
How many hours add up? Yeah.
Yeah. And it's all about just getting the time in.
No. And that can brings me to another point I wanted to bring up was this idea of highest value return on your time. So, every activity you do is going to either be a high value return or a low value return. So how high value return might be writing, networking, going to a festival, making something, connecting with other people, things that are pushing your career forward or pushing yourself forward. You know, it might still include reading or listening to a podcast or something if that's, you know, personally enriching you. So my goal is to always figure out what the high value things are, what the low value things are. You know, low value might be browsing social media just because you're bored, hitting snooze in the morning 10 times before waking up, binge watching shows all weekend. And so doing more of the high value activities and less of the low value activities. So I'm curious for you, what you consider to be your highest value returns on your time.
I mean, really, it's always writing.
Yeah.
Because I don't think that anything matters. I mean, there's stuff that you have to do, but like the work is the ultimate object and the ultimate arbiter of how far you're going to go. And it's not just that like you have to have finished work to put out into the world, but you also, every word you put down on the page, you're that much better of a writer than you were previously. And
right. Yep.
And so, and I mean, it's also, I kind of almost look at writing as this like luxury time, and I'm not in love with the experience of writing. I don't, you know, fetishize it, but I always just like, if I just have uninhibited writing time, oh man, it's the best.
Yeah. And it energizes you and it kind of feels like it's that thing you're meant to be doing. Well, let me phrase it this way, because you're pretty well established in the world. And I think oftentimes there are activities that we think are high value activities when really they're low. Is there anything that you would describe like that in your own life that like, no, the writing's the thing, you need to put all this stuff off or spend more time writing and less time doing blank?
Yeah. I mean, and I'm always learning and always growing, but I think one thing is to not, and this is an obvious thing, but it's to not get caught in the allure of social media. Yeah. And, you know, all that you earn from a clever viral tweet is, you know, however many internet dollars, right? And
yeah.
And I think that there was this brief moment and this is probably like 3 or 4 years ago, where this was still pretty novel, where, you know, something like Shit My Dad Says would appear. And then all of a sudden people would be like, oh yeah, let's make that into a TV show. You know, that era is in the past.
Yeah. But you do feel a lot of pressure to, oh, you have to have a brand, you have to be interacting with fans. I mean, you've got to feel that to some degree, right?
I used to. And I feel like I'm like, I decided to be aggressively bad at social media. This is my response to it. Right. And, you know, it's not that I don't spend any time on it, but I like deleted basically everything, I guess, aside from Instagram off of my phone. And, and I really value in-person interaction. And so for me, I made a shift where I was like, I am going to prioritize being engaged with real people in real life in the city where I live.
Yeah. Oh, I love that.
And that has really been a big change for me, because I'm super introverted, you know, in terms of like where I derive energy. So I don't.
Right. So it's easier for you to interact on the internet than it is in real life.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. And so I just found, I for so long I was working full time and writing full time, essentially. So I just was not, I was not that social and was not that engaged with people. And then I kind of hit a career point too, where I realized that people were looking at me, people were coming to me for advice. Like I wasn't the young kid trying to figure things out anymore. I was like, oh, I'm established enough that people, you know, see some value in my experience and want to learn from me. And those things kind of happened at the same time as I was getting very disillusioned with the whole social media churn and the kind of, I'm not going to say falseness, but just lack of richness of that space.
Yeah, I think it's true. And I think people are really feeling that. And I think, you know, like the Fyre Festival documentaries that just came out that were a big, I felt like were like a big magnifying glass on what this influencer culture that we have is. Just, there's nothing underneath it. It's all this kind of sheen on the outside. And we've got all this false sense of community that's not really there. And people are really longing for something personal and connecting with people, because I've gone through the same shift that you have. I mean, I still have a lot of presence online, but I've also been trying to get into the community in Atlanta and really connect with other creators and really build up those personal relationships. And it's been night and day for me.
Yeah, same here. And yeah, it's just, I don't know. I mean, I think that stuff only matters when, you know, for you as an artist to go and create something on your own, that it doesn't matter until, one, you share it with an audience, but also that you create something within a community. And
yeah, I 100% agree with that.
So I'm in a position in life where it's like, I don't lack for, you know, comfort or whatever. Like I have a fine life. It's not like we're starving or anything or struggling to put food on the table. So there are people in that situation that have to make, you know, they have to make decisions based on a different calculus than I do. But one thing that's really important to me is making decisions for my career that are based on the way that I define happiness and the priorities that I make, rather than, you know, what society writ large or anyone else has as their priorities.
Yeah, I love that. So like most of my kind of, I feel like, consumption of entertainment has been replaced by creating of entertainment. So I'm curious, especially as a writer, like you want to consume stuff. You want to read what comic books are popular right now. You want to read your friends' comic books. You want to watch what's going on in TV and movies in order to influence you. Do you have a hard time making time for that because your highest value activity is creating stuff as opposed to consuming?
Yeah. And you know, I'm trying to think of what I mean, I barely read comic books anymore, which is terrible. Yeah. And I have like my nightstand is this massive stack of my friend's comics that
mine is too with scripts. Yeah.
Oh man, it's terrible. And yeah, just, I constantly feel bad about how little time I get to spend reading, and I'll pretty much just like every once in a while, you know, get to spend some time watching a show. And if I like, especially if I get, you know, if I'm like sick, I'm never very productive writing. So it's like, all right, like I'm going to pick something to power through. But I also, I mean, something I've been trying to do is rather than just stream a bunch of stuff, and this goes back to that community thing, is in Atlanta, we're super fortunate to have Videodrome, which is a DVD rental store. Yeah. And so
one of the few that still exists.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. And it's phenomenal. It has this incredible collection, and it's great people that run it. And it's relatively close to where we live. So I realized, I was like, I don't go there very often. Like, why am right. I not there multiple times per week? And so I just decided, I was like, okay, that's, you know, that's what I'm going to do, is I'm going to go find stuff to watch there and add that into life. But I don't know. I'm kind of hoping that, you know, once the kids get a little older, I mean, most of my reading time is like reading to the kids before bed, which is great.
Yeah.
And I love and you know, our oldest devours comic books, which is amazing.
yeah, that's awesome.
But, you know, selfishly, I'm like, yeah, there's all this stuff that I want to read. But I do, you know, a lot of the reading that I do, I have, so my grandma was an English teacher, and she had this huge collection of books that came to me when she died. And so I've been working my way through those, and it's, you know, it's stuff that some of it's stuff that I've read before, and some is stuff that I haven't, but it's especially all these novels that have her handwritten, teacher's
note. Wow. That's so cool.
Yeah. It's pretty incredible. So like the most recent thing I read was, Shane, the novel that the film is based on.
The Western.
Yeah. Which was, you know, it was like shockingly good. I mean, I expected it to be good, but it was excellent.
So why do you think so many writers think that they have no time to write in the day? What's getting in the way of that mindset for most writers?
Well, I do. I mean, I think that we do genuinely live in this time in which, and it's the thing that I realized is, every conversation that I have with anyone who's creative involves the word bandwidth. That's like the word over time is like, oh man. And I'm so guilty of saying, it's like, oh man, like I have no bandwidth right now.
Right.
And I think that some of it does come from the fact that we are always connected.
Yeah.
And so, you know, you always have access to your emails, and there's always more emails coming in. And so because we're always sending more emails than someone else, you know, is getting emails from us, and it's this never, you know, never ending churn. Yeah. And so, I mean, I think that is absolutely a component of it. And then it's also, I don't know, and this might just be Atlanta that feels this way, but in Atlanta, there are so many creative people doing so many cool and interesting things. And I mean, I've had nights where it's like, there are five different things I've been invited to.
Right.
And so it's really a challenge to, you know,
to fill that bandwidth.
Right. Right. And then of course, I don't know. I mean, I can't speak for anyone else, but it's just stuff arises. It's like, you know, you'll have like a sick kid at home, and then you lose a day, and then you're scrambling
and
on and on and on. I mean, my big thing, like my biggest goal for myself, creative in a creative sense, is I just want to be able to work on like two to three things at any one time.
Yeah.
That's, and I, you know, this is self-inflicted, like 100% this is self-inflicted, but I'll tally up everything that I'm doing. And it's like, I have 17 creative projects going on right now. Like,
right. So yeah, where most people 2 to 3 might sound like too many, you're like, oh no, that's my dream because it's so
right. Low. Yeah, exactly. Like if I can be, you know, thinking about the next thing, working on one thing, finishing up the last thing, like at any given time, oh man, that would be gravy.
If someone's listening to this right now and they are just spent, so they have a full-time day job, they have small kids at home, they get home and they just cannot find that window to write, but they have this passion and they have this dream. What advice do you give to a person like that?
I mean, the number one thing is I hope that that person understands that, you know, me as someone who's, I guess, an established writer, I'm right there with you. Yeah. You know, yeah. It is just as tough for me. I would kind of go back to that thing about, you know, the reservoir of energy that you have. And I think the best answer usually is to try to get up early to, and so I just went through this thing. So I've been having, and not anything major, but a few health issues with just getting sick all the time from the kids. And I generally take care of myself pretty well. Like, why am I getting sick all the time? So I did all these different, you know, tests and figured out like, oh yeah, like my vitamin levels are kind of trash and, you know, if you think like all like relatively minor correctable stuff. But one of the things was like my stress levels were terrible. And
oh, really?
Yeah. And especially like in the morning, they were really, really bad. And then they go down in the middle of the day when I'm at work. So like work is not bugging me at all. And then they're really bad at night. Well,
it's like every time I'm around my kids.
Yeah, it's almost like that. And, you know, like I love my kids and I love spending time with them, but like taking care of little kids is super, super difficult. So, and again, like that takes a mental toll. So what you can do, and it's hard, is just force yourself to go to bed early and then wake up early, wake up before the kids. Yeah. Like if you can wake up at 5 and get an hour of writing in before they start, like that's one more hour towards, you know, getting that thing done, towards being better than you were the day before. And then also just know that, you know, seasons of life change and the factors of your life change. And so you have to adjust as you go. Like I used to be someone who would write a lot at night, and now, you know, it hits 8:30 and I get the kids to bed and I'm just like, I'm cooked.
So, since you bring it up, how important are things like exercise, sleep, and eating healthy? Are those things that you make a priority, or are they kind of sacrificed on the altar of writing?
I'm a really big believer in pretty intense self-regulation, I guess. I don't know how to put it. Like, I was not a healthy person like as a kid and even through college, and I've kind of been, you know, gradually figuring this out, but I pretty much like lift weights, I guess 3 times a week, and then do, you know, some form of cardio every day, even if it's just going for a long walk, and then try to do some high intensity interval training, and then I eat very, very specifically, you know, a pretty intensely healthy diet. A lot of it is just, you know, trying to kind of boost my immune system and be healthy. But then also, I mean, I just like, I want to keep it functioning well. Like I want to, you know, be healthy and be able to write for a long time. But I also like, I just want to be, you know, a healthy, well-functioning person outside of writing. Like writing is not everything.
Right. And I find that your writing even gets better when you are a healthy person and taking care of yourself, and your energy levels are up when you're eating right and you're exercising, and those energy levels translate to, you know, better passion, better products and all that.
Yeah. The whole, like the notion of the like tortured writer,
right?
Like,
tortured artist.
Yeah. It's total bullshit. It is just absolute. It's an excuse, just the way that, you know, that saying you have writer's block is an excuse.
So last thing I wanted to talk about is, what do you say to somebody who, you know, both of us work in indie film a little bit, and in that world, you're just wearing so many hats, and it takes so much energy to get something over the finish line. And really, in any of these creative endeavors, it's like that, that oftentimes you can just get to that point where you're just burnt out. So you've been pushing at 110% for weeks and months, and you get to that point and you're like, I can't push anymore. So what do you say to somebody that reaches that burnout point in order to maybe get reinvigorated or to reassess what they're doing?
Well, I identify with that absolutely, because I mean, I hit that point last year, and you know, truly, I was just like, I can't keep going the way that I'm going. And for me, and I mean, I'm not going to say that I've, like, you know, gotten got all the answers to everything. For me, it's taking a little time away, you know, getting, not having any kind of big project, and really slowing down, taking the time to just, you know, get out and go for walks, taking the time to read, taking the time, especially to reread, you know, books that, and I think especially prose is really good for this, because it just, you know, it activates your brain in a different way. Getting off of your phone. I mean, spending, you know, truly like trying to spend a half hour a day or less on your phone.
Yeah. And I just realized my phone keeps up with the amount of time I spend on that, which whenever I check that part of the app, I'm so embarrassed by myself.
Yeah. Thankfully there are these tools now, right? Where it's really easy to be like, oh, this is
to track it.
This is exactly how garbage I'm being right now.
Yeah, but I think all that advice is absolutely fantastic and really helpful. So let's wrap up with, I'm going to do five rapid fire questions at you here. So what do you write?
I write comic books, prose, and film.
What's your proudest accomplishment?
I mean, really being a dad.
Aww. That's great. And you can tell folks you're a dad to two boys, right? How old are they?
About 4 and 2.
How do you define success?
The reaction of the audience.
What writers do you most look up to and why?
Vonnegut is, probably close to the top of the list, just in how, smartly simple he is. And Italo Calvino, the great Italian writer, for his inventiveness and whimsy and mischief.
That's awesome. I haven't even heard of that guy. But in terms of Vonnegut, I went to his museum in Indianapolis, and they have his writing station where he would write, and he would write on a typewriter, but he would like sit like on a couch, and the typewriter would be on a coffee table. So he'd be like slouched over. It'd be like the worst posture you could for writing. Yeah.
That sounds horrific.
Yeah. So what advice would you give to your younger self?
It's going to be okay.
All right. So where can people find you and your creations on and around the internet?
Let's see. I'm pretty bad with this internet thing. I think it's just Van_Jensen on Twitter. And then I think it is Van_Jensen on Instagram.
Yeah. Just Google Van Jensen.
Yeah. You'll find some stuff. And then, artsatl.org is the, if people are in and around Atlanta and want to learn about the arts, there's a lot of cool stuff there.
Very cool. Awesome. Well, thank you so much, dude. I really appreciate the time.
No, thanks for having me.
Thanks so much to Van for being our guide this episode. So many great takeaways, but as always, I want to leave you with one specific assignment for the week. This week, take an assessment of how you spend your time each day. Write out everything you do from morning till night, from work to TV time to social media browsing, and ask of each activity, is this a high-value activity or low-value activity? Take a look at your energy levels. Are you spending your high-energy times doing high-value activities? Take an honest look at your day and make adjustments. Figure out how to do more of the high-value activities and less of the low. And if you're looking for daily accountability and encouragement, we'd love for you to join us in our private Script Blast Facebook group, which you can find at facebook.com/groups/scriptblast. Sign up for more free resources at scriptblast.com or email me personally at hudson@scriptblast.com. I'd love to talk to you about your writing schedule and help you prune your lifestyle. Next week, we'll be speaking with screenwriter Jessica Coleman all about what I like to call the mental slog and how having a writing partner helps keep her afloat. In the meantime, keep writing.